Why don't we go ahead and get started? Good morning. My name is Jennifer Patterson. I am the Life, Accident, and Health Legal Counsel for the New Hampshire Insurance Department. And today I'm serving as the hearing officer for the public hearing on insurance rule INS 4000, Uniform Reporting System for Healthcare Claims Data Sets. INS 4000 was first noticed in the New Hampshire Rulemaking Register on February 26, 2015. Today is March 24th, 2015. It is a little after 10 o'clock, and I'm opening the public hearing on INS 4000. And we do have a number of people present. We have passed around a sign-in sheet, so everyone should sign in. And you'll have the opportunity in a little bit to speak and make any comments that you want to. The purpose of INS 4000, as I think most of you know, is to establish the standards for submission of the data that populates our CHIS database. And the reason that we revised the rule was really to try and separate out the core legal requirements from the technical parameters, and to put the technical parameters into an instruction document that is also being adopted as a rule. So most of what's in this rule is not new, although it does look very different if you're trying to read through the rule from the old version of INS 4000. So we did work, Martha McLeod worked with our contractors, some Friedman, and there's been kind of lengthy discussion with DHHS because the two agencies work very closely together on this database. So although this is a public hearing, there's already been a lengthy process in terms of the development of the technical instructions that are being adopted as part of the rule. So what I want to go through just very, very briefly is the different parts of the rule, because it's a new format for this rule. So first, we have INS 4001, the purpose and scope. That hasn't changed very much. We have INS 4002, which is the definitions. There have been some changes made to the definitions. I'm not going to go through them in detail, though. So part 4003 is now the annual registration requirement. That's a requirement that had previously existed, but it was a little hard to find, and so now it's, I think, a little clearer for the carriers and third-party administrators who submit the data under this rule exactly how that plays out. Next is INS 4004. That's the filing schedules. This is the timing for the submission of the data. And that varies depending on the number of covered persons or members whose claims are being administered by that particular filing entity. Part 4005 explains who has to file and then who is excluded from filing. And again, much of this detail was in the old rule, but I think it's a little easier to find now. So any policy that provides coverage to the employees of a New Hampshire employer that has a business location in New Hampshire, that policy is considered a policy issued in New Hampshire. An out-of-state employer's branch location in New Hampshire is considered a New Hampshire employer. Again, that's not a change from the previous rule. There's also language, which again is not new, but I think has been clarified a little bit, about situations where more than one entity is involved in the administration of a policy, and the carrier or the third-party administrator is responsible for submitting all healthcare claims, and also for ensuring that there are uniform member and subscriber identifiers where there are other files that are processed by subcontractors. So it's easier to see the kind of the universe of what's happening with any particular individual. This section, 4005, also talks about exclusions from filing requirements, and that is for carriers or third-party administrators. Well, and for carriers, there's an ex- you have to file if you offer products on the Health Insurance Exchange for New Hampshire, regardless of the number of members. That is new because the exchange is new. Otherwise, if you're not offering on the exchange, if you don't cover more than 9,999 members in New Hampshire at any point in the coverage, at any point in the year in any coverage class, and that number is the same for third-party administrators. So then 4006 is the healthcare claims data set filing, and really that includes the requirement that's key to this new version of the rules, which is that the data has to conform to the detailed instructions that are set forth in the instruction manual. Then I think part of that, is the submission of the HEDIS and the CAHPS. Never pronounced that right, data. That was in the prior rule, it's just been moved in location to a different spot. Part 4007 are the compliance standards. Part 4008 is a new section that deals with waivers, and the department can, under certain circumstances, grant a waiver to the requirement of submitting a specific data element. And then part 4009 is the actual incorporation into the rule of the instructions. And then the instructions, that's a lengthy document. All of this, as I'm sure you know, is posted on the department's website. So the data submission instructions are included as Appendix 1, so they are part of the rule, but it's a separate 97-page document. And I think what's worth looking at for those who are interested in commenting on the rule in particular is the executive summary, because the executive summary outlines what components are new under this new version of the rules. So those are all listed out. So including, and this gets into the technical detail, so I probably won't get into too much technical detail, but that a provider file is required, med sub coverage now has to submit files. Denied claims are now to be included in claims files. Again, the requirement of consistent member and subscriber identifiers, including when the services are, the files are being provided by subcontractors. Alternative payment arrangements, there have been changes to make sure that those claims are also included. So those are the main ones, but again, do take a look and make sure that you're familiar with what's new, because it is a little hard to parse what's new since everything has been changed in location. So, since we do have people who want to speak, I will give you the opportunity to do that. I've got the sign-in sheet, and I'll go through everyone who has put their name down, and you'll have the opportunity to speak. We also have a deadline for written comment, so we're not going to close the hearing at the end of all of the comment. We will recess it, and written comments must be submitted by April 1st, 2015. So with that, let me move on to the public comment, and our first sign-in is Mary Poulin of Tufts Health Plan. So, Mary, if you want to go ahead.
I mostly had questions. I wanted to know the usage of the data so that we can make sure that we're aligning what we're submitting with the uses that are going to happen. So, for example, if you're going to be validating our rate filings or using it for risk adjustment or the insurance calculations, then we'd like to true that up with those submissions.
Okay. Is that a question you're comfortable answering, Tyler?
It might be something better to deal with outside of the hearing. I mean, I think this is the chance for us to hear from you, but I think a detailed explanation of that, which I could go on literally for hours, wouldn't be appropriate in this format. But feel free to follow up with me.
Okay.
In general, it's not a new requirement, though. I mean, we've had rules in place for almost 10 years, so it's...
Yes, we've probably been submitting that long.
There's nothing revolutionary that's going to be different going forward than how we've been using the data, so... So maybe it's probably best just kind of offline to go into a lot of detail about how we use it. And,
Sure. So then let me just comment that we've seen a big development in Massachusetts as more and more departments are using the OPAIR claims database down there to support a lot of validation and checking on our data filings that we do to them directly. So the Department of Insurance will be using it, the Group Insurance Commission, which is the buying agency, or the state will be using it. The connector is using it. And Massachusetts is doing its own risk adjustment, so the connector will be using that data for risk adjustment.
Yeah.
So we were trying to get a feel for what the utilization is going to be. And again, it's part of who it is within Tufts Health Plan will be helping to support that data submission so that we make sure that we're going to be congruent with the uses that you have.
Yeah, I will say though that don't think of the data submissions in the CHIS as something for the insurance department's purposes. We're a user of the data,
mm-hmm.
but it's a public resource. So to an extent, researchers or other folks in the industry can use the data, I mean, other state agencies, policymakers. It's supposed to be open and a resource for everyone. So to the extent we think about these data collection rules, we're thinking about that larger audience.
Right. And then one other comment is we're also submitting our data to the OPAIR claims database in Rhode Island, and they've instituted a member opt-out rule where people have the right to not have their data submitted. And we very much wanted to speak against that because we're finding that the people who opt out have a different risk profile than the people who allow their data to be submitted. So we have the sicker people opting out, which then invalidates the use of the data for a lot of purposes.
Sure.
So we wanted to just go on record and hope that you don't adopt that.
Thank you.
Great. Any other comments or
no.
questions on the rule? Great. Thank you for your comments. Chris White. Would you like to comment?
Point.
Okay, great. Amy Costello?
Insane, we'll be submitting mine.
Great, thank you. Martha?
No comment.
Great. Thank you. It's Martha McLeod. Mary Fields?
No comment at this time.
Great, thank you. And Tyler, I presume you don't have comments, if you're welcome to make any. Paula Minahan?
Hi. Paula Minahan, New Hampshire Hospital Association. I just have a couple questions. I haven't spent a ton of time going through this, but the provider file, what exactly is included in the provider file? Like, what is that?
It's a little awkward because this is our chance to hear from you being a formal hearing, but it's nothing unique from what we've received in the past, but it's your basic information, including NPI, provider name, address, information that you're more than familiar with, I think.
It's new. It's now required.
I think that the difference is in the past, the provider attributes have come on the claims. There hasn't been a provider file. So the provider file is going to have more information. It's going to be a separate file from the claim submission, not just simply putting all the attributes on the claim, on the service line record.
Okay. But they're going to match up somehow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We would hope.
It's an appendix one.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
It's an appendix one, the outline of the
okay.
data elements.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they map fairly similarly.
And maybe I'm misunderstanding how these hearings work, but I go to a lot of them and I ask questions and I usually get answers, so that's my expectation. As far as Medicare supplemental coverage, so and then the MC Medicaid fee-for-service, those are new, right? I mean, have those been coming in?
No.
Okay, so those are new.
The Medicaid fee-for-service, the way the CHIS is described, it's supposed to include Medicaid data. So to the extent that we're making sort of administrative changes to incorporate them into the same database, I mean, it's more of a technical change than I think it is a policy change.
So then my next question is, are you going to have that data segregated from the general health insurance data, CHIS data? Because it could impact the analysis, certainly, just like Medicare would, too.
Right. But I think your question is more about how the data would be released rather than how it's stored, which is a DHHS and sort of a separate set of rules. So, I mean, to the extent that it's going, I mean, there will always be kind of a separation or at least an ability to identify the data
mm-hmm.
separately
mm-hmm.
so that you
mm-hmm.
wouldn't end up with some of the confusion I think that you would be concerned about.
Yeah. Okay. And denied claims were not included in the past, is that true?
They have been submitted sometimes, but it's always been paid claims in terms of being referred to.
Yeah.
Now making it clear that denied claims are expected as well.
Okay. I think that's a good addition. I think those were my questions. I think those are my questions for right now. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And again, feel free to submit your mm-hmm. comments. And so the only other person present in the room is Chrisella Brandy. And would you like to speak?
Well, I didn't plan on it. But since I missed the first couple minutes, you can decide if I can just talk to somebody offline or if you wanted to repeat it. Just the when you're saying that this is this. No new requirements in this, it's more just how it's all organized, is that the gist of it?
There are some new requirements, but the majority of the changes are clarification and sort of a reformat. We updated the rules in 2009 and made some changes that I would say were much more significant then, mm-hmm. but we retained the format of the rules because people were familiar with it, even though the format was actually pretty inefficient, I mean, particularly for somebody who wasn't familiar with them. Mm-hmm. Now we've taken a step back and said, no, let's just redo the format, make it much more efficient. So when we talk about the bulk of the changes, it actually has more to do with formatting than it does actual content or requirements.
Okay, that's helpful. Then, as is always my question on any of these forums, is there anything particular about dental that we want to know about?
Well, one of the big changes in 2009 was actually including dental as a requirement.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Since then, I don't think there are any significant changes in terms of how the dental claims are submitted.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some additional fields that are part of the new submission instructions, and one that is relatively important is a tooth number.
It's probably more in line with how you do your billing. Hmm. You know, where it's probably more in line with how you do your billing. You bill by tooth number, and that was not collected before, but will be collected going forward. I'm gonna allow for deduplication and things. So it's not different from the adjudication process.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Great. Well, thank you. And is there anyone on the phone who would like to speak briefly? Okay. So seeing no one wishing to offer further testimony, I will now recess the public hearing on INS 4000. The record will remain open for written comment until the close of business April 1st, 2015. So thank you for your participation, and we are closing the hearing at 10:20.
Thank you.
Thanks.